jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress.
To prove the crime of manslaughter, the state must prove the following two elements beyond a reasonable doubt. Number one, Troy Singer is dead. Number two, the death of Troy Singer was caused by the culpable negligence of Samantha Hall. Here's what culpable negligence means. Each of us has a duty to act reasonably towards others. If there is a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to harm, that violation is negligence. But culpable negligence is more than a failure to use ordinary care towards others. In order for negligence to be culpable, it must be gross and flagrant. Culpable negligence is a course of conduct showing reckless disregard of human life. The negligent act or omission must have been committed with an utter disregard for the safety of others. Culpable negligence is consciously doing an act or following a course of conduct that the defendant must have known or reasonably should have known was likely to cause death or great bodily injury.
Pretty straightforward.
I mean, we all know Troy is dead. So number one, taken care of.
Right. And I guess we know her acts caused the death.
And I think the key phrase to me when they're describing what culpable negligence is reasonably should have known. I think it's been established over and over thoroughly that she reasonably should have known that what she was doing could lead to his death, and she did it anyway in a reckless
She? Because, again, we have to consider their life practices.
How are you going to debate this one? This one is so cut and dry. The other ones, I could see how maybe you'd want to debate
Carl,
it, even
hear
though
me
she's
out.
Still obviously guilty.
Let's
but this one,
her.
How
Carl,
can we even debate this one?
Hear me out. We've discussed that they did this on a regular basis. So there was also a mention of she's not using culpable negligence if she uses, quote, ordinary care towards others. Ordinary care is what she did considering their lifestyle.
Well, we know that they did bondage stuff before. We don't know that they specifically did this before. And also there's been several elements of this that have all been put into evidence that show that she should have known that this would lead to his death and was reckless about various details from the night.
Dominic, you look like you're in pain.
So this whole idea of culpable negligence, meaning an utter disregard for human life or of the safety of the person exposed. Here's what it comes down to for me. She left him alone.
Yeah.
She
really
left him alone.
Me.
And that to me communicates an utter disregard of safety. Right.
And then
do you
remember what her friend said when she would talk to her about this? I think she used a specific term that she seemed indifferent about it.
Yeah,
she did. And on the phone call, did it seem like she was indifferent? Yeah. I would say it seemed like she was indifferent to his suffering and his death.
So maybe even if she didn't intend for him to die, the fact that she wasn't there made this a riskier practice. So even if she was experienced in knot tying and in this type of practice, like Sharon, the knot expert, said, is there's always a risk when you do these types of activities. And I feel like even though she gave that release in the knot, the fact that she wasn't there just seems to have elevated the risk.
Everything about this setup was risky. Absolutely. She used the footstool instead of the feet on the floor. She used the thinner, more dangerous rope instead of the safer
one. And that was the other thing
one.
Is they mentioned that this rope was, what, 2 inches thinner than the millimeters thinner than the average rope because it would make the rope burn more.
Right.
And therefore
evident.
More dangerous.
And
more dangerous.
In addition to that, she also wasn't there, as Dominic said.
Yeah.
I think
that's the one that really bothers me.
That
it
really
sticks out to me that she wasn't there.
So are we all in agreement
that
is definitive of culpable negligence?
I'm still wavering.
It's the gross and flagrant part that I don't know
how to define.
Well,
and that's the problem. Like, was she grossly, was she like, okay, I'm not going to be there to make this more dangerous? Or, you know, was she thinking that?
Well, and utter disregard for human life. Well, yeah. You're not
What I'm hung up
you're
on is that a lot of us, myself included, keep saying, well, it's subjective. It's subjective, right? But at some point, it's our jobs to define it. And I keep kicking the can down the road, waiting for things to define themselves for me. And I feel like they're never going to. So I'm trying to push myself to start making calculated decisions. That's why they ask amateurs to interpret this. We're not legally trained professionals. We don't know the definition of gross and flagrant. We have to interpret that for ourselves. So now I'm starting to push myself to make a decision as to what that means.
Mason, can I ask you then the fact that she left him alone in this act, that is not culpable negligence for you?
I said, I don't know. And
so
now
please help me to understand what it is that's...
That's exactly the train of thought I'm trying to talk myself through right now, is that I don't know if it's gross and flagrant, but now I'm realizing I need to decide if it's gross and flagrant. I can't say, well, I don't know what those words mean.
Here's a question for you.
I need to decide for myself.
You're a reasonable guy. If you had a kid, would you give him a pair of scissors and then let him play with the scissors in the room by himself?
No, I would not.
What would you say? Hold on for a second.
Find a different analogy parent and child, please.
No, but how about with your friend?
I don't like the analogy either, but I'm happy to play along because I think it illustrates a point.
Right. So would you call that negligent if the child then sticks the fork in their eye?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the thing I'm wondering is that the state didn't argue manslaughter. I mean, they've only been arguing murder. And I don't know, is this lesser charge just something they're throwing in there? I mean, this whole case has been them arguing first-degree murder. Yeah. And now we're talking about manslaughter. I'm wondering what the state was thinking when they're presenting this case to us.
Well, it goes back to what you were saying earlier about they're just throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think that they were probably concerned about the fact that they didn't have a specific knot, and they wanted to make sure that they presented enough to us to make us feel like we could feel safe giving that charge. And I think also if they would have presented the manslaughter charge, then they were worried that we would have just defaulted to, well, we don't know about the other two, but we'll just agree on manslaughter. And I'm also concerned that that's what we're going to do here, is just because we can't agree, we're going to go, well, manslaughter, fine. But I think that we really need to consider murder one and murder two.
We do, but it's great to have the options, so we're not looking at it in a binary
way. Let's start
with
manslaughter and see if we can get on the same page here.
Yeah. Which I feel like we're close. I feel like we're all kind of getting pretty close.
No, I keep going.
We're
back
not, because Mandy wants to start with manslaughter and Carl wants to start with murder one.
I just keep thinking this analogy that you guys keep drawing between a parent and a child. So I had an alcoholic ex-girlfriend, and she was recovering. She was totally functioning and everything was fine. I regularly left liquor in our apartment. She was fine. She never killed herself. We had that trust because I would drink around her and she was okay with that. Just like these people were okay with what they did with each other.
I don't see what
Mandy,
that has to do with anything.
You
my
weren't
dad
in
left
a dominant
liquor
position.
Yeah.
And my
that's
my
the key.
Well,
and I think
right.
Honestly, and I know you hate the analogy, but I think that's why we keep going back to the parent-child analogy. Mm-hmm. Because there's a clearly dominant person in that relationship.
This goes even further than that, because I would say, you know, I don't have any kids, unfortunately. Hopefully someday. But I think if you have kids and you tell them to do stuff, sometimes they'll listen and sometimes they won't, right? But in this relationship, he listened to everything she said, regardless what it was, regardless how he felt about it. No kid is getting... So this goes further than any parent-child relationship ever would.
Yeah, and I want to raise the fact that I do have kids, and the phone call thing keeps coming back to me.
Right.
If I knew my kid was in trouble, I would not wait 39 minutes to call the local police department without calling 911.
Yes, not even
rushing
call 911.
That keeps haunting me.
Yeah, so. I agree.
Which is kind of what makes me go back to, because again, I'm kind of not comfortable with first degree. I don't know if this was premeditated, but looking at second degree murder, I mean, it does raise a lot of questions, because second degree directly brings up this issue of an imminently dangerous act, depraved mind, which I think we've talked about her mindset quite a bit, and also this lack of regard for human life.
Can you call? Is it an abuse of 911 to call for to do a welfare check? She might have.
Well,
been
she would have called 911 saying she thinks he's dead.
But she wasn't. I mean, she was to give her the benefit of the doubt.
It's also not her home. That wasn't in her name.
It was a welfare check.
Standing with a noose around his neck. There's no reason to not call 911 in that situation. The options are either he's dead or he's not.
She didn't know when he started the act.
Why wouldn't you call 911?
She did not know what time she started the act.
But wouldn't it be reasonable to determine that he started the act once he received the text message from her?
It would have been within, I mean, we're talking almost an hour here. I think it's reasonable to think he started it within that hour. And it wouldn't take him an hour to put his head through a noose and
as we've seen from everything else about their relationship, she said something, he did it.
He did it.
Jump
right away.
Yeah. How high?
Right away.
Exactly.
Right away.
Yeah, that
right
martini away. That martini story is
I'm sorry,
pretty
it just
incriminating.
Doesn't hold water for me. He would have waited. I think he would have gone.
No, that's true.
Right that second.
I think that too, but she doesn't know that. And if you're doing, if you have a lifestyle,
I think in that case it's fair to assume
that people probably don't enjoy hearing about or knowing about, as we can see by many people here, then she's not going to rush to have a stranger come into
the bondage
room.
It's not a stranger, it's the police to make sure that the person that she allegedly loved was dead or not.
But I think that's a separate argument, though, because the fact that she didn't call the 911 after, quote unquote, after the fact, presuming that he'd already started it, that has nothing to do on the bearing of what we're charging her with, because we're dealing with what she did before the act. And did she intentionally tie the knot wrong? Did she create a scenario where he was in danger because she wasn't there?
Yes.
Or was it the fact that he didn't untie it his fault and therefore not on her? I mean, that's what we're determining. I mean, I think it goes to her state of mind after the fact, but she can't be, you know, held responsible for his, I mean, the law doesn't say she's responsible for his death because she didn't call 911 after the
fact.
Right.
So I think we have to look at, again, going back to this knot and the fact that she wasn't there, you know, that plays in on whether or not this is her fault or not.
Of course, for culpable negligence to apply, what happened to Troy Singer must not have been planned. The rope with which Troy died was 4 millimeters in diameter and made of jute.
Miss Largo, what can you tell us about choosing a bondage rope?
Sharon Largo, rigging expert.
There are 3 things to consider when picking rope. Length, fiber, and diameter. Length, because it needs to be long enough to accommodate whatever you need to do. And beginners always seem to need extra length.
And you did say that Samantha wasn't a beginner, correct?
No, she was not a beginner, not at all. She'd been practicing for over 10 years that I know of. She actually convinced me to switch from priming my ropes with baby oil to mineral oil. So I'd say she definitely knows her stuff.
Great, thank you. You mentioned fiber. Can you tell us why rope fiber is important?
Yes, I can. Different fibers feel differently, and they behave differently. It depends on how hard or gentle you want the rope to feel. How much you want it to have, you know, the give on it. What it looks like, what it smells like, can really, really impact the experience. So I'd say hemp is the most common rope for bondage practitioners. It's natural, it's earthy, and it's very strong with very little stretch.
What is jute rope?
Jute rope is a vegetable fiber. It's light and it's strong. Its firmness makes it popular for couples who are into edge play.
What is edge play?
It's very extreme risky play. It's play that requires a bit more planning. If I have students who are more into the sadomasochism side of bondage than just the restraint aspect, I might recommend that they use jute just for the feel of it.
In your rigging course materials, you described jute rope as the least forgiving of the natural fiber ropes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Harder than hemp rope?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, let's talk about the diameter.
Most bondage rope is about 6 to 8 mil. The larger the diameter, the more comfortable it is for the sub. Thicker ropes are gentler, and since they cover more surface area, they can cut into the skin less, which creates less risk of nerve and circulatory compression.
So why use thin ropes at all?
Thin ropes are good for tying delicate areas like the genitals or perhaps fingers or toes. And if you're into decorative bondage, they have a, it's more elegant. It can add a nice embellishment to what you're tying on. Excuse me. Bondage isn't all about function. Some people are more into the aesthetic side of things.
Hmm. What diameter do you recommend for your students?
I recommend a 6 mil. It's thin enough where you can maneuver it in your hands easily without being so thick that it's cumbersome and hard to tie down.
Would you ever recommend 4 millimeter rope for breath play?
No, I wouldn't.
Why not?
It's way too dangerous. It would cut into the skin, break blood vessels. I imagine it could rupture the trachea and, you know, the windpipe if enough pressure was applied.
Are there any circumstances in which you deem a 4 millimeter rope safe for breath play?
Personally, I wouldn't, but, you know, in the hands of an experienced practitioner, perhaps if the sub was lying down and they took great care not to make it too tight.
Okay. Are there any circumstances in which you deem hanging someone by the neck in the air with only a 4 millimeter rope safe?
No.
Have you ever done that?
No.
Would you ever do that?
Absolutely not.
Detective Miles, was there any other rope in the playroom besides that which was used on May 1st?
There was an entire section of the closet which was just rope, hung in braids and bundles.
Did you identify what fiber of ropes those were?
They were hemp.
All of them?
All of them.
Did you catalog the diameters of all the other ropes in the playroom?
Yes. They ranged from 6 millimeters to 9.5 millimeters.
So every rope in Samantha's possession was softer and thicker than the one she used to hang Mr. Singer.
Objection. Asked and answered.
Overruled.
Assumes facts not in evidence. Samantha did not hang Mr. Singer.
That one's the same.
Okay, Detective, was every rope in Samantha's possession softer and thicker than the one she rigged for Troy to hang himself?
Yes.
Detective, were you able to identify when and how the jute rope was purchased?
Yes. It was purchased at a craft store on Cortland Avenue on Samantha's debit card, April 26, 5 days before Mr. Singer died.
A cornerstone of the defense was a text exchange between Samantha and Troy 3 weeks before the end. While Troy was at work, he unbuttoned his shirt collar and sent Samantha a picture of his neck. There was a faint, darkened stripe around his Adam's apple, the bruise from a rope. After that picture was sent, the following exchange occurred. Samantha. Yes. Troy. I keep tightening my tie so I can really feel it. Samantha. But I don't like the placement across your Adam's apple. Troy. I wanted it to hurt. Samantha. Too sensitive there. We need to make sure it's higher next time. Troy. Whatever you say. Samantha. And it's fading. Already. Troy. Yeah, you know I heal quickly. Samantha. But I want you marked for weeks. I want you thinking about me and the way I own you every time you swallow. Troy. God, yes. Samantha. There are some things we can try. Leave it to me. Troy. Always. Samantha. How far do you want to go next time? Troy. Too far. Samantha. Stop that. Troy. No, I'm kidding. I would never let it go too far. In the defense's closing, Mr. Cortez used this text exchange to bolster the argument Troy was the reckless one, wanting things tighter, wanting things to hurt, wanting the risky placement, despite Samantha's reservations. And it was these dangerous desires of Troy's that led to the tragic accident.
For this to have been an accident, Samantha could not have known the outcome in advance. And there was no way she thought this could reasonably end in anything other than Troy's death. And should it have, by some chance or by Troy's blatant disobedience, failed, what's the harm? He wouldn't report a crime. she'd be free to try again, and again, and again, until she maneuvered an accident to successfully occur. The lack of liability, by creating an environment in which Troy seemingly killed himself, is what made her believe this was the perfect crime. It's up to you to show her she was wrong.
If you're listening to this podcast, it's probably not your first podcast. Although if it is, thank you. It's not my first either, so I've heard of Casper Mattress before now. When my Casper Mattress came to my door this past week, in a box, like a smaller box than I expected. Podcasts always say they arrive in a box, but this was like a manageably sized box. I was literally able to get the entire mattress up my flight of stairs to my bedroom by myself, which, if you've ever been in a position where you're moving or living or reorganizing by yourself, you realize the value of being able to do that. Shout out to the ladies, not being sexist, but there's something empowering about being able to be completely self-sufficient in your own home. The reason it's comfortable is that it's compulsively designed with memory foam and foam layers to create the right firmness, sink, bounce, and breathability, which if you're somewhere like me in Southern California, staying cool during the night means everything. The reason it's affordable is because Casper sells directly to consumers. The reason there's no risk is that you can sleep on one for up to 100 nights and then return for free with no hassles, no BS if you're not into it, if you're in Canada or the US. And speaking of the US, it's made in the US. Boom. If you want to check it out, they've got over 20,000 reviews with an average of 4.8 stars, so the internet clearly has a crush on this mattress. If you're moving or need a better sleep, go to casper.com/deliberations and at checkout enter code DELIBERATIONS for $50 off your mattress. Supporting our sponsors directly supports this podcast. So again, that's casper.com/deliberations with promo code DELIBERATIONS. Back to the show.
Okay,
wow.
So
a lot to think about.
Yeah,
I mean, this is an expert on ropes and rigging.
Yeah,
and when asked if she would use this rope, she said, "No, I wouldn't."
No, she was very adamant about that.
When she said, "Is there any circumstance under which she would use this?" She said, "Maybe lying down,
right,
under strict supervision." Yep. And then when asked, right, "Would you ever do this and hang somebody with it?" It was an emphatic no.
Yeah.
So I just want to be clear on this, why this is so damning for me. And if anyone wants to jump in and refute any of this, please. So this is from my notes. The rope she used on Troy was 4 millimeters in diameter, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And according to Sharon Largo, the rope expert, the greater the diameter, the safer the rope is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She specifically said that she would never use a 4 millimeter rope for, I believe she referred to it as breath play, correct? Mm-hmm. So she recommends 6 millimeter. Sam had plenty of hemp ropes,
yeah,
right,
and every other rope she had
was
would have been safer to use than the one she used.
And wasn't there,
right? And this is the part that's really tricky. She bought the rope 5 days before.
Well, and it was jute rope, which Sharon Miss Largo also said is the least forgiving of all the ropes,
right?
And that every other rope, like you said, Dominic, was hemp rope.
So, does anyone have an argument that any of this is not negligent?
This does not look good.
You could actually say it was premeditated.
But no.
Well,
what
that's
you can
another
say,
thing. Let's just talk about negligence.
What you can say is that she had never used this rope before. She purchased it 5 days beforehand. So it is negligent. She did not try it out before she did this act.
But I feel like as an expert, I mean, Sharon said she was more skilled at rope play than even she was.
Right.
So if
she gave Sharon advice,
this is an absolute no-no. I can't help but think Samantha had to know that
she how many books does she have about ropes and rope tying? And
do we know that they never tried it before with this?
Well, she didn't own it.
She didn't own any of this. She didn't own any.
That would lead me to believe that there was a reason
5 days to experiment together with her supervising.
Right.
However, the state never said that there was any evidence of of prior rope burns. I feel like that would have come up in an autopsy. Exactly. They would have said, oh, that there was other older rope burns that were starting to heal, and they never brought that up.
That's a really good point, because they said with this rope, it breaks blood vessels and it breaks the skin and leaves marks easily.
So there should have been marks
and can crush the windpipe,
I believe. And I think also, if you look at the fact that she had all these other ropes, if this rope was even a possibility to use, you think she would have had it in her stash at some point.
So she bought just
the fact that they didn't have it and didn't use it meant that they didn't have it and didn't use it for a reason.
Yeah. But then they had that text exchange where he asked for more.
Yeah, but he also said that he was kidding in that same exchange.
Wait, listen to yourself, Carl. Right. You said they didn't have it and didn't use it for a reason. So she just 5 days before he died decided that she wanted to kill him.
Yes.
You just said yourself that she had no intention of using it before. So you keep saying that just her being a dominatrix, she is ready to kill him. Or this is something she wanted to do in 2012 when that first message came where she wanted to see. Then you just negated your own argument. Then
no, I
she
didn't.
Could
it
have
was
bought
a fantasy. It was a fantasy for that whole time. They got closer and closer until the fantasy became real when she got the rope and decided she was actually going to do it this time.
He saw the rope. I mean, like, it's in his house. He saw the rope when she bought it 5 days
maybe
before it happened.
How do we know that?
You yourself said that they called it a sexy surprise.
It was a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. That is true.
She went to a craft store. I mean, she just went to a craft store. Who knows? She could have left that in her car.
Are there specialty stores for this? I mean, this is so foreign
to
me.
Well, I feel like you could go to Home Depot and get these ropes. Yeah, or something. But yeah, there are specialty stores.
They buy these ropes at Home Depot?
I don't know. I don't know.
But in Home Depot is almost everything.
A breath play store?
No, but there are like sex shop stores. Yeah.
I mean, I think it seems like, except for Mandy, we're all pretty in agreement here that this rope was an extremely dangerous, extremely risky choice.
No, I agree. I agree that it was dangerous. What I'm saying is that
she bought specifically to use in this situation.
She bought it to do this act. I'm not saying that that's not a thing she did. That is in the evidence. That is true. What I'm saying is that I can't be positive without a shadow of a doubt that she wanted him to die by using this rope.
But can you agree that it was negligent?
I believe it might go past negligence. I mean, she had to know how dangerous it was.
Mandy, I'm trying to negotiate here. Can you agree that it was at least negligent?
Yes.
Okay,
let's
go back to I want to talk about second degree murder again, just really briefly. In second degree murder, it says it's not necessary for the state to prove the defendant had an intent to cause death. We can look at if the act itself indicates an indifference to human life. This word indifference keeps coming up over and over and over again with how she looked at him, with how she treated the situation. I think even if you can't say, Mandy, that she intended him to die, which I believe she did, I think we have enough evidence to show that she at least was indifferent to human life.
No, what about the text exchange?
Yeah, what if he had an indifference to his own life? Wouldn't that supersede that?
He was pushing limits.
Yeah, he said he wanted to take it too far.
And then he said, I'm joking.
Right,
I'm
so
kidding.
Which one do you put more stock in?
The fact that he said, I'm kidding.
No, but she was his dom. So by your argument, Carl, he had to follow what she said. And she said, no, that's too sensitive. And of course he's going to say to her, like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't mean that. Even if he genuinely did, he had power over himself in that moment. She gave him power over himself for maybe one of the first times in their relationship, and he took it.
And maybe he was kidding, but the fact that he initially said he wanted to take it too far, doesn't that mean...
I don't think that means anything.
I think the defense just threw that in as a last second. Like, I hope that you guys glom onto this and ignore everything else that you've seen about the relationship and about her. And I think it was a distraction from this rope expert whose testimony is extremely
damning.
Also,
another thing Ms. Largo said is that she had never, ever used the 4-millimeter rope. Mm-hmm. I think because 4-millimeter rope was purchased 5 days before the act, I'm assuming that neither had Samantha used 4-millimeter rope. So this was a new thing.
It could kill somebody.
And that's negligent. But she didn't know that. Had she used it? Did she know that?
She's an expert,
but she had never used it.
You can't say that she didn't know that this wouldn't kill him or that this wouldn't put
him. I think that
there wasn't a reasonable risk to leave him alone.
Risk is what I'm agreeing with.
She knows more about ropes.
He said he would never let it go
exactly. I would never let it go too far.
I'm not arguing intention right now. I'm arguing... To be perfectly honest, I'm leaning towards negligence.
Okay.
Indifference.
And I...
Carl, we're talking about something specific right now.
Okay,
what
just can't... Let me finish, please. I just can't wrap my brain around that, that here you have Sharon Lago saying explicitly that she would never use a 4-millimeter rope mm-hmm. for breath play.
Yep.
So why the hell would right. you leave him hanging by himself?
Someone you love.
I agree,
if
apparently.
It was the first time
I
you'd
agree.
Ever use this, you feel like you would need to be there.
Because he
absolutely.
Gave you his word that he would never let it go too yeah. far. You let, trust
that's
him.
That's true, Mason.
But if they knew, if she knew how dangerous this rope was, which I think it's
extremely
fair to
dangerous.
Presume that she knew how dangerous this was. She should have known that she couldn't leave him alone with
right.
this because
right.
of how because what did Sharon say? It could
maybe lying on the floor.
Rupture his trachea. It mm-hmm. would, you know, suppress the blood vessel. I just
yeah.
So let's reconsider. Yeah. Let's go back to her reaction with the text message and the phone call to the police then, given what we know about the ropes now. So going into it, this is by all considerations an extremely risky, dangerous mm-hmm. thing to do using this rope.
Yeah.
So that would mean
absolutely.
There's even more motivation that if he didn't text her back, uh-oh, something
yeah.
went wrong because
Colin,
this is a
that's
really
true.
Dangerous rope,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's true.
That's a good point,
so why wouldn't she immediately call 911 and
yeah.
say, hey, you guys need to get over there right away.
Or rush
and even
home.
if she didn't tell them,
yeah.
even if she didn't tell them we did this thing with this really dangerous rope, for her, she should have known, oh, you know, he could be dead because
yeah.
we used this really, really dangerous,
right.
risky
yep.
rope. And there was none of that. She waited to call them. She didn't even call 911.
Yeah,
she
right.
didn't sound concerned. And I just, there's no way that I can make sense of that
mm-hmm.
rather than she's indifferent to his life or she wanted him to be dead.
Right.
Those seem
I think
like the
there's
only
also
two
a level
options
of panic in the phone call. I mean, like, a level of panic in not calling.
Well, why
say you heard panic
why
in voice?
No. I mean, I can imagine that there would be a level of panic of, like, how do I talk to officials
well,
about
the other
this?
The thing is, like Jana said, why didn't she just go home?
Right.
That's
and if
true.
If she wasn't, and talking to the officials, if she wasn't ashamed of her lifestyle or what they did,
no, they were
what
closeted, Janet. They were
yeah.
closeted.
She wasn't ashamed of it, but
if,
she wasn't public.
But if she was afraid,
okay.
like you're
but
saying,
also, this
but
is
Mandy,
the police.
If you're saying she was
yeah.
she wasn't sure how to talk
exactly,
to the police,
this is
she
the
was
police.
Unsure. Why didn't she just go home and check on him?
That's true. I don't
and
know if she
who cares if you're
there.
In a meeting. I mean,
well,
what's
she would have gotten
important?
There faster
right,
than the police would have gotten there.
Yeah, see,
someone's life.
Troy saying he would never let it go too far to me exonerates her up until the act. But then considering how it turned out, that actually mm-hmm. makes her culpable,
I know,
in my
but
opinion.
But she also did
but he
say
also said,
when
I'm
he...
kidding. You can't put too much stock in one exchange and pay attention to the first part and ignore the second.
I mean, he was tightening his own tie around a bruised
and
neck.
That, yeah. That
he
was...
chose to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And said, yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And then she said, it's too sensitive there on his Adam's apple, but he kept tightening his own tie. Can we give him a little bit of credit for himself?
Yeah.
Remember what he said about the closet. I mean, look at the closet. Look at the martinis. This isn't a man who could make choices for himself. He was told what to do, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what this one text message says that they threw in at the end, look at the relationship. Look at everything we've seen. She told him what to do. He did it.
And that was his choice, and he wanted
and that,
to.
And that was it.
No, but in that very text message you just cited, she told him,
she
that's
told
too
him.
Dangerous.
Exactly.
And he had
and
the nerve as a sub to tell her, no, I want to take it further.
But then, so but was she kidding. Acquiescing to
kidding.
His desire?
Yeah.
So was she acquiescing to his desire when she went out and bought this rope that she, as an expert, should have known was too dangerous? Was she doing that for
it's
him and his
possible.
Desire to want to take it too far?
No, because she, look at what she talked about, like Mandy keeps referencing back in 2012. She was talking about taking him to the edge, wanting to see the blood in his eyes for years. So it wasn't like because this one text message he mentioned something offhandedly, she was like, oh yeah, we should do that. She'd been fantasizing about doing this kind of stuff
we
forever.
Can't.
And also, remember, there was another, I forget the name, but there was another domination person earlier that said Samantha likes to take things further.
Mm-hmm.
That was put into evidence.
So does Troy.
Right.
Yeah.
And
which
we
is,
can't treat doms and subs like they're computer programs that run a certain way all the time. They're human beings
yeah.
that have temptations, that have vulnerabilities, that change, that grow, that think, that even people who are lifestyle practitioners I can't imagine that they're in that sexually charged mindset 24 hours a day. Just because they lead that lifestyle doesn't mean they don't have moments of humanity that we can all relate to. Mm-hmm. And maybe even as a dom, she decided, I'm going to do this for him. Maybe she had a moment of vulnerability, almost like a sub would have in that moment.
She specifically said over and over that this isn't for you, this is for me.
No, these are sexy messages that they said. That's how they talk. That's their language that they talk to each other in sexy moments.
But she also said that to her friend,
when
remember.
She got the present on Christmas, the Facebook video, where they're not saying, I want to kill you, I love when you choke me. They're talking like a normal couple.
Yeah. Right, but remember when she was telling her friend, when they would talk about the ex-boyfriends and whatnot, that
she was
that
talking
she,
to that, another person wait, in when, the BDSM
when
community.
She, when she said that, you know, they thought that she took it too far, she never showed any compassion for them, or that wasn't playing around. They weren't even there to hear her saying that. That was her saying, yeah, these guys are basically not man enough to take what I can do to them.
Once again, she was talking to someone else in the BDSM
this
community and
is.
Hanging on
She's
to her dom status.
That
whereas
that
with the text,
took it too far.
She was telling Troy that I'm not going to take it too far.
Until she found Troy, and then with Troy, she found someone that she could take it as far as she'd always fantasized.
Or did she
about
find
doing.
Someone who wanted
because
to take
Troy,
it too far himself?
Because Troy was receptive to that.
Yeah,
because Troy wanted it.
Because
you just said that. Troy wanted
she's
it.
She's the predator and he's his willing prey.
I don't think he wanted to die, though.
I agree with
I
that.
I doubt he wanted to die, but he maybe didn't know limits, and this was a new thing.
So then is the burden of responsibility then on her?
Yes.
Well, and that's, being I think that's the ultimate question.
Yeah.
Is, yeah.
This is the first time the kink community has united for a cause in criminal justice. Certainly many charges have been forged against them historically and contemporarily. But the community's support hasn't really happened until now because of the secretive nature of their lifestyles.
I mean, when you say that, you make this community sound maligned. What charges have they faced before?
I can think of a charge in Texas and a charge in Virginia right now off the top of my head. But sexual deaths being misconstrued as murder has been happening as far back as 1791, when a composer named Frank Katsura died of an accidental hanging in the company of a prostitute. The problem is cyclical. The more these deaths are misunderstood, the less inclined people are to speak out and educate one another about safe practices. If we can take judgment out of the equation, we can start a dialogue about tolerance and safety.
Perhaps the question shouldn't be whether the treatment Troy received on May 1st was perilous, but whether he desired that degree of peril. Next time on Deliberations.
Enhancing a feeling of fear for your sub involves enhancing an illusion of risk.
Subspace is the state a sub enters when they're being dominated.
She wanted Troy to feel fear.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Macklin McGlahey, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau, Adam El Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. News and Courtroom: Allison Brown, Michael Cortez, Victoria Murray, Jonathan Zeger, Richard Fullman, Victoria Dunn, and Cassandra McGee, aka Miss Cassie. To support this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. And please support the sponsors. They're taking a chance on this new podcast. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I'll see you Monday for our next jury break.